Back in the day, I used to work as a Girl Scout summer camp counselor. I loved everything about this job, especially having grown up as a Girl Scout myself. And the way that our camp worked was that campers would sign up for camp for a week at a time during the summer. And each week of camp was a bit different in terms of what programs were offered. But there were tons of fun traditions that stayed the same from week to week, from summer to summer. One of these beloved traditions at our camp was that every week there was a big competition across the entire camp to see which unit of campers could gather the most garbage from around the campgrounds. At the beginning of every week, each unit was given a trash bag. This is a real thing. Each unit was given a trash bag that we would carry around the camp with us all week long. We'd carry it from the pool to the archery range to the boat docks. We'd carry it all around through our hikes. And as we would go, we would look around for pieces of trash to pick up, so that we could fill our unit's garbage bag as much as possible. And then at our closing campfire each Friday, the camp ranger would look through each unit's trash and he would decide who was the winner. The winning unit, the group that brought in the most trash, got to have their names burned into a cool little wooden plaque. And then that plaque would hang on the wall of the barn on our campgrounds, alongside the wooden plaques showing the winners from summers going back years and years and years. All these units who had managed to gather the most trash. It's funny how winning this competition brought so much pride to our campers. And even counselors who had been campers before, the ones who had been coming to camp their whole life, they would stand in the barn looking at that wall of wooden plaques and they would reminisce about the times when they too won the trash challenge. And they would laugh about the weird pieces of garbage that they remember picking up among the years. I heard tons of stories, like the time when one group of campers found an old tire on their canoe trip down the river. And they were so determined to have this count as trash for the competition that they heaved it into one of their boats. And then they paddled back to camp proudly and eager to show everyone their find. There was also the time in one of my units that I was the counselor for when it was a group of brownies and they found an entire set of busted IKEA shelves that someone had dumped into the woods. And all the girls in my unit were committed to working together to carry these shelves back to camp for the competition, even though these shelves were bigger than they were. It was such a joyful way to keep the camp clean and to teach campers some great values about teamwork and caring for our planet. I asked our camp director once how this trash competition had even gotten started. And she said that she honestly didn't know because it was a tradition from way before even she had been a camper there. She also said that she wished that there was a way to replicate this competition and do something similar for those times during the school year when they'd have big Girl Scout campouts hosted at the camp. These weekends when Girl Scouts from across the state would flock to camp just for the weekend. She said that cleaning up after those weekends was a big job. Really? I asked. And I was surprised to hear this. It was surprising because I remember cleaning up after ourselves being an important thing that we learned when I was a Girl Scout. our leaders always made a big deal about leaving a place better than we found it. And my camp director responded. She said, "Oh yeah, no, that's still a thing. They still teach that." But when you have a large gathering of people like that, it's hard because it is so easy for everyone to assume that someone else is going to do it. It's easy for everyone to assume that someone else is going to do it. Oh Lord, have I been guilty of that in my own life? Not doing something because I assume that someone else has it covered. May we all remember that we are that someone else, and we can step up and do something.
This month, we've been exploring what it means to be creative. And of course, when we think about creativity, we think automatically about artistic practices, drawing, painting, building, writing poetry, or creating music. These are wonderful creative practices, and I'm so grateful to our members who shared their skills and gifts with us in the creativity sessions. But of course, they aren't the only ways to be creative. I've been thinking a lot through this season about what it means to be creative, what it means to have imagination. And it brought me to this concept, prophetic imagination. Prophetic imagination, prophetic meaning prophet, is a phrase created by the theologian Walter Brueggemann. His book with the same title was published originally over 40 years ago, and it explores the Hebrew Bible prophets, Isaiah, Micah, Jeremiah, and others, as those people who imagine a new world, a new way of being. This is now a whole school of theology, and there's even a center for prophetic imagination. Here's a short clip from the executive director of that center, Mark Van Steenwyck.
Imagination in general is the capacity to see the world differently than it is. I mean, so when a kid draws a purple unicorn, they've never seen a purple unicorn. It's coming from their imagination. But when we start thinking about how society could be different than what it is, then we're getting into the prophetic imagination. I mean, in particular, the prophetic imagination is the capacity to move beyond the world as it seems and to begin to see the world as it might be, God's vision for the world as it might be. And even more than that, it becomes dangerous because the prophet evokes and challenges people to move from the world as it seems to the world as it might be. And it's not just criticizing. Prophets don't just criticize, they open up the possibility for a different world. That's what the prophetic imagination is. Getting caught up in the prophetic imagination, whether, you know, it's through reading the Gospels or reading the accounts of the prophets or resonating with Dr. King's vision for the beloved community or even having some of your own vision for how the world could be differently, could be different, is terrifying.
He ends with the truth that having these alternative possibilities for how the world could be, how the world could be different, is terrifying. Maybe it's a beautiful vision, but still, in order to be imagination, it has to involve change, and change is always anxiety-provoking. Imagination calls us beyond what is real to what is possible. The first step in making change in our lives, in our community, or in the world is imagination, having the creativity to imagine a new possibility. This month, as we explored creativity in our worship services, religious education, and beyond, we were also in the weeks of our annual stewardship campaign. I have heard it said that creating a budget is creating a moral document. It's not simply the accounting of the dollars that we will spend in the coming year. It is an accounting of our priorities. What do we value? Where do we put those dollars to work in our fellowship community? Our congregation has long placed a value on paying our staff fairly, and we have worked to be able to do that. We're still hoping to be able to add some benefits, particularly healthcare and dental benefits for our staff and their dependents, which I know doesn't sound super sexy, but it is one of the values that we have as a congregation. Do we believe our staff deserve some support toward dental care? Or their children deserve some support toward health insurance? In order to make it happen, the first step is imagining that it could be so. And then going beyond that to imagine even bigger possibilities. Expanding our reach through online worship, even as we return to in-person at some point in the future. Or taking a larger supportive role in the justice life of the Fox Cities. We have to have the imagination before we can even begin to make these things happen. And then, the next step after the imagination, after the creativity, is to get to work. Put your dot on your paper, as our story said that Kim read for us. Put the trash in the bag, as Allie shared. Creative people don't just have great ideas, they make them happen. In discussing this service, Allie shared with me a great episode of the podcast Hidden Brain, which is a show about psychological phenomena hosted by Shankar Vedantam. It also airs on NPR. In this particular episode, they're discussing why it is that humans love to watch other people do things on TV or YouTube, things like baking, building things, decorating, dating, or other skills. We get some sort of satisfaction, like we ourselves were doing it. And in fact, the podcast talked about how we begin to overestimate our own skill after watching these kinds of shows. He interviews a psychologist from the University of Chicago named Ed O'Brien. And one of the things O'Brien says is this, quote, "Unfortunately, we spend so much time in a state of mental simulation. We're constantly just thinking to ourselves, what would happen if I do this? What would happen if I do that? If I moved to this city or if I tried out this skill, right? We're constantly just simulating things in our minds. And in those simulations, we lack the bottom-up, real-time experience of actually performing, of actually experiencing those events that we can only find when we jump in and try." End quote. I find this to be true. It's so satisfying to watch the Great British Bake Off and imagine that I could make that incredible cake with the little macarons on top, but I've never tried. Watching someone else do something or imagining myself doing something does not actually make me much better at it. Maybe I pick up a few handy tips from the show, but ultimately I have to get my hands dirty in the kitchen to learn how to make that kind of cake. When I learned how to administer CPR, I remember so clearly that one of the first steps in the process, after you assess the situation quickly, is to point to someone nearby and say, you, call 911. You do not say, somebody, please call 911. Because like Allie said in her reflection, it's too easy in groups of people to imagine that someone else will do it. Everyone will look around. Who? Me? Not me. She must have meant you. You. Call 911. You. Pick up the trash. You. Make your pledge. I loved that reading that Allie read for us earlier by the Reverend Vanessa Rush Southern about her mom appearing on Let's Make a Deal. I loved imagining this woman, normally not a flamboyant character, dressing up and daring to throw her net over the executive's head, creating her own silly catchphrase to try to get on the show. Reverend Rush Southern says, quote, "Sometimes you just have to leap in, dress up, stretch out a hand, cast a net, and see what happens. It may not work, or it may get us halfway to where we want to be, or achieve half the results we would dream. But that's closer than the parking lot." This past year has been a year of creativity for us here at the Fellowship, certainly, and for so many others in our world. I would not have even been able to imagine the possibility of this anniversary and what it has entailed. A year ago, I found myself leading our fellowship through some of the most rapid, massive changes we have ever seen. And all of us, ministers, staff, board, lay leaders, imagining new possibilities at every turn, and then making them happen as quickly as possible. The same was true for governments, schools, restaurants, and businesses. Not only did we need to imagine a new way, we needed to make it happen and fast. And for the most part, we did. Necessity is the mother of invention, as they say, and ain't that the truth? But if I have learned nothing else from this pandemic, I have learned that the key to creativity is trying. Putting ourselves out there and making an attempt. Maybe failing. Maybe only getting halfway there. But getting further than we would if we hadn't tried at all. And learning with each attempt. This year, as we begin to wrap up our pledge campaign, many of you have already made your pledges for the coming fiscal year. Thank you. Many of you have not yet done so. We're only about halfway to our goal. Today is the deadline for turning them in. If you do so by today, you will be entered into a drawing for prizes. I hope you will do so for the prizes, but more importantly, to put forth your own vision for what this fellowship can be in the future. We have a grand imagination, a prophetic imagination of what our fellowship can be in the world. A well-supported staff who can in turn support a vibrant cast of lay leaders and volunteers, a place of welcome for people of all ages, all classes, cultures, genders, and races. We have a bold vision of rich and engaging religious education for children and youth, where they learn how to love themselves and change the world. We want to be an active partner in the wider community in support of justice. We want to be able to provide support for each other when things are hard, emotionally, and with tangible support and care. The first step is imagination, and then the next step is to do something in support of that vision. Make your dots, pick up the trash, dress up and throw the net over the executive's head, make your pledge. Make it with your imagination, with creativity, not the same amount you give each year. Your pledge matters. I hope you have already looked at our amazing pledge campaign website, but if you haven't yet, I encourage you to look at it. It's beautiful. We at the Fellowship have no other financial support but you. Our membership. Each one of you matters. We cannot envision a future. We cannot shape a budget without you. This should not be a rote exercise. Oh, right, my pledge. This should not be something that happens only in your head. Your pledge is your creativity acted out in real life. It is a moral document. What do you want to contribute to the possibilities of our future together? Some of you are on a very fixed income. In those cases, we know that a small pledge still makes a really big impact. Thank you, truly. Some of you have greater flexibility in your budgets, and I ask you to examine what you are giving and consider if it reflects on your imagination for our fellowship. Our Pledge Campaign website also has a color-coded guide for what a fair pledge looks like for people with different financial circumstances. Take a look at that. Many people have shared with me that it has been helpful for them. In fact, my husband and I just made the jump from the green category to the red with the pledge that we just turned in. A year ago this week, when we needed to pivot so quickly to online worship, you might recall that I led a short informal service on Facebook Live. The following week, we got our act together and began using Zoom, but that first Sunday, it was just me, a floating head on Facebook Live, lighting a chalice and offering whatever comfort I could muster in that moment. You might recall that I read a children's book called The Three Questions by John Muth. And I didn't even have the technology to show the pictures on screen. I just showed them all awkwardly like this. But the three questions in that book are, when is the best time to do things? Who is the most important one? And what is the right thing to do? The answers, which are adapted from Leo Tolstoy, are, remember that there is only one important time, and that is now. The most important one is always the one you are with. And the most important thing is to do good for the one who is standing at your side. I find these three answers to resonate again today as we contemplate what it means to be creative. Sure, an imagination, a way with words, a skill with music, or beautiful painting, or baking, or nice, but they're not the key to creativity. The keys, as we have learned through these past several services, are to get out of our own way, to not be afraid to jam with the professionals, and to just do it, just make it happen. Now, not at some other more convenient time, with the people you are with, you, not someone else. That's true creativity, making it happen. May it be so. And amen.